Hi, I'm Marianne Campbell. This is the sixth talk in a series of eight given by Al Stewart for the City Bible Forum. Have you ever felt that you can communicate across the world, but not across the dinner table? You're not alone. Ecclesiastes will give us some tips on how to survive in the real world.
Cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will find it again. Give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. If clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there will it lie. Whoever watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. As you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in a mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. Sow your seed in the morning, and at evening let not your hands be idle, for you do not know which will succeed, whether this or that, or whether both will do equally well.
Well, this morning I sat down at the breakfast table. The paper had been delivered. Here it is. Today's Sydney Morning Herald. And what do I notice? I think you could pick up any paper at random, like Day by Day, and find much the same kind of stories. Here we are. Hurricane babies who defied the odds. And here's one little girl born after the hurricane who weighs just 680 grams. She's about the size, fits in the palm of this person's hand, and she's going to make it. They say how incredibly lucky this little girl is. On the same front page, Telstra shares drop significantly. Heard one man on the radio this morning say he'd invested heavily in Telstra shares a while ago. Now, the bottom's dropped out of the value. He's lost a fortune. And he said, I'm very worried, I'm anxious about the future and what will happen. We turn over the page and here's a sad story of two tourists from Taiwan who were killed in a bus accident. 22 hurt, two killed in a bus accident down at Jamboree. We turn over to the next page and there's a comment on the health minister and his questionable sense of humour. We turn to the next page, and here's a story about Mr. Brogdon. Now, in the same paper, we've got one politician who makes a bad joke and it costs him his entire career. Got another politician who makes a bad joke about that and it costs him nothing. Where's the justice? Is that right? One of them's been treated unjustly. And then we go to the next page. Three little boys killed in a tragic and unexpected accident. They drown in a dam when the car goes in. And then a jet crashes into a suburb of a major city in Indonesia, 137 people killed. Random. Why those 137? They just got on the wrong plane, didn't they, at the wrong time? And then we turn back to page five, and here's a good old NRMA. Guarantees in life. One, death. Two, taxes. Three, NRMA insurance guarantees the lowest premiums. I think probably one of those is more certain than the others. Death, taxes, yes, NRMA, well, if they sponsor City Bible Forum, they might get better. Anyway, here we go. But that's City Morning Herald, any day, life seems random, unjust, and the unexpected tragedies grab people, destroy their lives. Here's the thing. This was printed yesterday. Ecclesiastes was written about 3,000 years ago, and yet they both seem like they were written today. The world that Ecclesiastes describes is the world that today's Sydney Morning Herald picks up. What does it say? Ecclesiastes says the world is random and unexpected and unjust. Written about 3,000 years ago, either by the great King Solomon or certainly through the eyes of Solomon. As we come to chapters 7 to 11, essentially what he does is has a look at the world. Given the way the world is, how do you survive under the sun? How do we respond to this? It's a little hard to work out structure. As I've looked at the different scholars who have written about Ecclesiastes, every scholar has a different structure, which may mean it's just hard to nail down exactly how Solomon has gone about looking at life under the sun. What I plan to do is just to look at some of the characteristics of life under the sun and then to see, Solomon says, so this is how you should respond. Life under the sun, this is how you should respond. It'll be a little bit like if Ecclesiastes 7 to 11 was a movie. I'll show you the shorts now, the trailer, and hopefully you'll want to go and read it for yourself. So what does he say about life under the sun? First thing he says about life under the sun, that is, it is unjust. 7 verse 15. In this meaningless life of mine, I have seen both of these, a righteous man perishing in his righteousness and a wicked man living long in his wickedness. And 8 verse 14, there is something else meaningless that occurs on earth. Righteous men who get what the wicked deserve and wicked men who get what the righteous deserve. This too, I say, is meaningless. The idea of there is no justice here, it's all around us, isn't it? That is, you can do the right thing and suffer. You can do the wrong thing and get away with it. I was just thinking today, as I thought about that, there's two events that spring to mind, both about people called Chan that I remember. Do you remember Victor Chan, the great heart surgeon, a man who did so much good and yet he's murdered as a young man? The other one that springs to mind is, you may remember little Carmaine Chan. She looked a little bit like my daughters. She was murdered in Melbourne in 1992. And the man who's done this and abducted a number of other girls, the police even give him a name, Mr. Cruel, has never been caught. So Victor Chan, a good man, is gunned down. Carmaine Chan's killer, 13 years later, is still at large. There is, it seems, no justice under the sun. Not only is life unjust, it is random. Chapter 9, verse 11. I have seen something else under the sun. The race is not to the swift or the battle to the strong, nor does food come to the wise or wealth to the brilliant or favour to the learned, but time and chance happen to them all. Most of us will work all our working lives to scrape together a mortgage and a house, if we're lucky, or a pension at the end of our lives or a super payout or whatever it is. And yet we've made an industry out of randomness. And what's the industry? Oh, Powerball and the lotteries and so on. On Sunday night, a grandmother in Newcastle won $15,234,000. While she may have enough money to spend the rest of her life, as the Powerball advertising slogan goes, the winner says she only wants to spend more time with her family in her hometown of Newcastle. And my guess is her family will be even keener to spend time with her now. Who wants to go and visit Grandma who just won $15 million? We're on, thanks. Perhaps I'm just a little cynical. It also seems that abilities are given at random, like being a genius. This man's a genius, Stephen Hawking. Those who should know say this man has the finest mind on the planet since Einstein. The man is a genius. Now, what's he done to deserve that? Well, nothing. He's really just lucky. It's kind of the cards that he's been dealt. Not only that, but he wrote a book called A Brief History of Time a few years ago. Exactly the right book in exactly the right market, and it made him a multi-millionaire. How lucky is he? But if abilities are given at random, disabilities are given at random as well, aren't they? And that is that Stephen Hawking has motor neurone disease, and the poor man cannot walk or talk or write without the use of a computer. Terribly unlucky. And yet when he was born, the doctors told him that he would only live, statistically, he would only live to be age 21. Stephen Hawking is now 53. Is Stephen Hawking desperately unlucky, or is he really lucky to have lived to be 53? And abilities and disabilities under the sun, it's all random. Not only is it random, but unexpected events catch people. Chapter 9, verse 12. Moreover, no one knows when his hour will come. As fish are caught in a cruel net or birds are taken in a snare, so men are trapped by evil times that fall unexpectedly upon them. We have had unexpected disasters, the tsunami and New Orleans and Mississippi and Hurricane Katrina, all unexpected. Thousands upon thousands of people killed, millions with their lives interrupted, all unexpected. But there are so many more smaller tragedies that are totally unexpected. I went to the RTA website and found the stats. 2000 was the most recent year that I could find. In the year 2000, you may not be able to read the small print, let me read it to you. In the year 2000, there were 59,914 road accidents, 29,415 casualties, and in that year, 603 people were killed. You cannot get a tragedy much more unexpected than a road accident, and that is to within a few seconds of this happening, these people were completely unexpecting it, and bang, they're dead. And that tragedy doesn't just affect 603. The ripples of that tragedy roll out like, you know, a stone in a pond. And I still remember 36 years ago standing beside my mother, 10 years old, and I remember the phone ringing, my mum answering it, and her being told that her sister had been killed in a car accident. I'll always remember it. The ripples of the tragedies roll out as they touch people. Not only is it unexpected tragedies and so on, but our world is full of cynicism and bitterness. Have a look at 7:26 with me. I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap and whose hands are chains. The man who pleases God will escape her, but the sinner she will ensnare. Look, says the teacher, this is what I have discovered, adding one thing to another to discover the scheme of things. While I was still searching but not finding, I found one upright man among a thousand, but not one upright woman among them all. Well, that's pretty straightforward. We'll just keep going. I thought I should deal with this because I hope you'll go away and read Ecclesiastes, and my guess is most of us would read this and think, what? What's he... Okay, a couple of things. First thing, remember, this is him talking under the sun. He's saying, if this is all there is, how will we see life? Elsewhere in the Bible, Solomon speaks very fondly of women and so on. The Proverbs, the book of Proverbs, Solomon is the patron of the Proverbs. Look at what Proverbs says about women. He says, he who finds a wife finds what is good and receives favour from the Lord. Houses and wealth are inherited from parents, but a prudent wife is from the Lord. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the reward she has earned and let her works bring her praise at the city gate. Solomon's very positive about women and their character and their abilities and so on, particularly in Proverbs 31, the end of Proverbs, if you want to go and look. So we come back to the problem in Ecclesiastes. What's he saying? I find more bitter than death the woman who is a snare, whose heart is a trap and whose hands are chains. And this is in the context of adultery and sexuality used wrongly. This is in the context of sex used as a weapon between men and women. Now, it's no surprise, do you remember he said, I looked at 1,000 women and didn't find one who did the right thing. Does anyone know in the history books of Israel how many wives Solomon is said to have? 1,000. And he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Concubines are reserve grade wife, okay? So he had we might need to edit that. He had 1,000 wives. And what the history tells us is that they were women from foreign nations married for political reasons. And what the history books in the Bible tell us is as Solomon got old, his foreign wives took his heart away from loyalty to the God of Israel. They seduced him away to their foreign gods with disastrous results. And I think it is that Solomon says, I was led astray. And under the sun... if this is all there is, he is bitter. And I have met many men who under the sun are the same way, and that is they hate women because they've been damaged. Now, equally, if a woman was writing this, she'd be just as likely to say how men have damaged her. And it may be she'd talk about, all men are liars, or 10 things I hate about you, or whatever it is. Under the sun, men and women don't treat each other properly so often. People end up bitter, cynical, damaged. So not only is life unjust, random, unexpected and bitter, the good news is there is at least a level playing field. A level playing field we all end up involved with. Here's a picture of one. That's a level playing field, isn't it? And that is, we don't end up playing on the field, we end up buried under it. The level we all come to is 6 feet under. He goes on to say, death is the great leveller. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 1. So I reflected on all this and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands, but no one knows whether love or hate awaits him. All share a common destiny, the righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean, those who offer sacrifices and those who do not. As it is with the good man, so it is with the sinner. As it is with those who take oaths, so it is with those who are afraid to take them. Whatever you do, good or bad, whatever, we end up dead. And so, this is the evil in everything that happens under the sun. The same destiny overtakes all. The hearts of men, moreover, are full of evil, and there is madness in their hearts while they live, and afterward they join the dead. Did you notice when they talked about the Superdome in New Orleans and the terrible things that had happened there and so on, you put people there under a bit of pressure without law and order, and how thin is the veneer of civilization that we live with and how quickly it's peeled back. Madness in people's hearts while they live, he says. Verse 4, anyone who is among the living has hope. Even a live dog is better off than a dead lion. For the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. They have no further reward, and even the memory of them is forgotten. Their love, their hate, their jealousy have long since vanished. Never again will they have a part in anything that happens under the sun. When you're dead for a long time. Well, if that's the way that life is, how should we live? Well, let me turn now briefly, I think, to one of the great philosophers and role models of the last decade, and that is, of course, Homer Simpson. If you're a Simpsons fan, you'll know this. Do you remember the episode where Homer goes to a Japanese restaurant, and while Bart and Lisa are doing karaoke and stuff, Homer ends up eating some blowfish, and it hasn't been cut properly. And Homer feels sick, and he goes to Dr. Ibbot, and Dr. Ibbot tells him he probably only has 24 hours to live. And then Homer makes a big long list of things that he has to do and he wants to do in his last 24 hours of life. And one of them is pass on wisdom for life to Bart, to tell Bart how to cope in life. And so let me see, here we are. Homer tells Bart, I want to share something with you, the three little sentences that will get you through life. One, cover for me. Two, oh, good idea, boss. And three, it was like that when I got here. And Bart says, oh, that's great. Thank you, Dad. And that's how to get through life. It's pretty cynical, isn't it? Saying, don't upset anyone in authority. Don't rock the boat. Don't be a crusader. Just keep below the radar screen and go for an easy life. Now, if life is unjust, random, unexpected, full of bitterness, and we end up in the level playing field, well, you know what? Ecclesiastes, under the sun, says much the same thing. So he tells us three don'ts. Here's the first don't. Don't wear yourself out. He says, in this meaningless life of mine, I've seen both of these, a righteous man perishing in his righteousness and a wicked man living long in his wickedness. And therefore, verse 16, don't be over-righteous, neither be over-wise. Why destroy yourself? Do not be over-wicked and do not be a fool. Why die before your time? Just go for the easy middle path. The next don't fight authority. He says, obey the king's command, I say, because you took an oath before God. Do not be in a hurry to leave the king's presence. And, note, do not stand up for a bad cause, for he will do whatever he pleases. Don't be a crusader. Don't fight those in authority. Does anyone remember Yes Minister, that brilliant BBC comedy? The minister, the minister of the crown, Jim Hacker, whenever his administrative secretary, Sir Humphrey, wanted to stop him doing something, Sir Humphrey would say to the minister, oh, minister, that project is very courageous. And Mr. Hacker would say, courageous, is it? Whoa, wait, stop. And that would stop him in his tracks. What Ecclesiastes is saying under the sun, don't be courageous. Don't stand up for a bad cause. One last thing he says, don't take things to heart. It's good advice, this. Do not pay attention to every word people say, or you may hear your servant cursing you. For you know that in your heart that many times you yourself have cursed others. Don't take everything people say to heart too much. You know you've said dumb things or thought dumb things about people. Don't take it to heart too much. So there's some don'ts. The do's, well, enjoy life if you can. Chapter 9, verse 7. Go eat your food with gladness and drink your wine with a joyful heart, for it is now that God favours what you do. Always be clothed in white and always anoint your head with oil. Do please note here, it's good to have a shiny head, okay? Anyway, I'm not allowed to wear white because we're videotaping this, but it's good to have a shiny head. All right, and he continues, enjoy life with your wife whom you love, all the days of this meaningless life that God has given you under the sun, all your meaningless days. For this is your lot in life and your toilsome labour under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For in the grave where you are going, there is neither working, nor planning, nor knowledge, nor wisdom. He says that when you're dead for a long time, so you better do what you want to do now. And here's the thing, we could easily be paralysed, I think, by anxiety or by cynicism. You know, what will the future be, so we won't do anything, or it won't make any difference. Solomon says, no, you've got to take risks. You need to step out. We actually have to live even under the sun. And so that's what chapter 11's about. Here's what he says. Cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will find it again. Give portions to seven, yes to eight, for you do not know what disaster may come upon the land. Most scholars think what it's actually about is business ventures, even overseas trade. Invest in many different ventures, trade and so on, seven or eight different things, because you don't know what's going to happen. He goes on to say, 11:3, if clouds are full of water, they pour rain upon the earth. Whether a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where it falls, there it will lie. I think he's saying there are some things in life that you cannot change no matter what, namely the past. When something has happened, bang, there are certain things, you can't change them, you've got to step over them and move on. You've got to do it. Or verse 4, whoever watches the wind will not plant, whoever looks at clouds will not reap. In other words, if you want to be 100% sure about any venture, you'll never do anything. There are no 100%s. Take the chance. You don't know what's going to happen, he says, as you do not know the path of the wind or how the body is formed in a mother's womb, so you cannot understand the work of God, the maker of all things. Sow your seed in the morning, and at evening let not your hands be idle, for you do not know which will succeed, whether this or that, or whether both will do equally well. A farming metaphor, and that is have a go at different things and try. You don't know what's going to work, so try different things, be busy, and who knows what will succeed. Well, what's the picture of life under the sun? Here it is. He says, it's unjust, it's random, unexpected tragedies grip people, cynicism and bitterness, and finally, a level playing field. Solomon wrote nearly 3,000 years ago, and yet the world hasn't changed much, has it? Do you know, I did a little research for this talk. In 1998, the Australian Bureau of Statistics put out a study that showed 10% of the Australian society, 10% suffer from anxiety disorders. That's not saying 10% of people are worriers. 10% of people suffer from what can be classified as an anxiety disorder. And where does that come from? Well, it's a terrible thing to live with, but it's fear about the future, fear of the world that we're in, that it's random, that it's unexpected, that what will happen. It's the kind of thing that tabloid television dwells on night after night. Isn't it? The ads for A Current Affair every night say, tonight we'll look at such and such a story which could kill you, or even worse, make you put on weight, and, you know, or the tradesman who will rip you off. And why? Because fear is the easiest emotion to tap into. We live with anxiety. So some of us live with anxiety, and I say that others of us live with a confidence that really we shouldn't. And that is, we think if we just make the right plans, if we just have the right strategies, if we etc., etc., then we're the masters of the universe. We will make such and such happen. The Bible has a lot to say to both groups, to the anxious and the overconfident. Let me just leave Ecclesiastes for a moment and say the Bible does speak a lot to the anxious and the overconfident. Jesus teaches often in the Gospels, as he teaches the crowds, he talks about the anxieties of life and the answers to anxiety. And, well, let me just take you, with regard to the overconfident, the book of James at the end of the New Testament. James was Jesus' brother, and he wrote this letter to people who follow Jesus. Listen to what James says to the overconfident, but it also applies to the anxious. James says, chapter 4, verse 13, now listen, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money, why, you do not even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while and then vanishes. All the plans we make, all the all the strategic plans, all the things we plan in the future and so on. Who knows what will happen? He says, we're a mist, we're temporary, we don't know. I wonder how many strategic plans were made by businesses in New Orleans this year. I wonder how many people had their lives all mapped out for the next few years and had invested in mortgages and all that kind of thing, and who knows what will happen. What does James say is the correct alternative? He says, instead you ought to say, if it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast and brag. All such boasting is evil. For those who are overconfident, but also for the anxious, there's the thing. If it is the Lord's will, what he's saying is that God is in control of our world. And the good news is that our world is not random and so on. Our world is under God's control. And it is possible to have confidence about our future. What the Bible says, the rest of the Bible's message is, we can be confident about our future. We can actually be confident about our lives now, and we can, like, with real cause, not overconfident, but we can be confident about our lives now, and even confident about eternity. Because our world is not ultimately random or unjust. God is in control. Now, the thing is, under the sun, if this is all there is, it doesn't look that way, does it? We need more information. What's the answer? How can we understand God's will? How can we have certainty? Well, let me say, 2 more weeks. And we come to Ecclesiastes' answer. 2 more weeks and the answer is there. Next week, the crime of growing old.